Okay, so we are in 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles right now, studying about Joash, king of Judah, and we're looking at the account of this right now in 2 Chronicles chapter 24. Our last time we read down through we didn't quite make it down to verse 16. Actually, we were looking at the 2 Kings account there in chapter 12 down through verse 19. So we're looking over now in 2 Chronicles 24 to see the parallel teachings that we have in this chapter. And most of 2 Chronicles 24, it follows very closely with 2 Kings chapter 12, except that it gives more details about what happened with Joash following the death of Jehoiada the high priest. Well, at the beginning of the chapter in 2 Chronicles 24, verse 1 tells us Joash was 7 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 40 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name also was Zibiah of Beersheba. It says that Joash did that which was right in the sight of the Lord all the days of Jehoiada the priest. And so that we also saw in the account in 2 Kings 12, that emphasis on the point there that Josiah did what was right in the sight of the Lord all the days of Jehoiada the priest, but not after that. So does that call into question whether he was doing what was right in the sight of the Lord because he himself loved the Lord? Well, of course, that does call that into question. So was he doing what was right in the sight of the Lord because he himself loved the Lord with all of his heart? Or was he doing that because he was under the guidance of a very strong, righteous leader, the high priest Jehoiada, the one that had brought him up? And we know that Jehoiada trained him in the ways of the Lord taught him to be a child of God and a faithful servant of the Lord. Well, he carried that through, at least going through the motions, all of Jehoiada's days. We do see that he was very diligent in the works that he was no doubt guided to do by Jehoiada that were good, but that only lasted until Jehoiada was gone. It says in verse 3, "And Jehoiada took for him two wives, and he begat sons and daughters. And it came to pass after this that Joash was minded to repair the house of the Lord. And he gathered together," and of course we saw in the account of this in 2 Kings 12, when we went through that, and there was certainly cause for why the temple would have been in disrepair at this point in time. Well, anything material is going to require upkeep. Well, as far as Joash's immediate predecessors, at least since the days of his great-grandfather Jehoshaphat, who was righteous. After him, though, was there anyone around that was going to be that cared about the Lord, that was going to be concerned with making sure that the temple was kept up as it should, that everything was in order? Well, no, they had forsaken the Lord. Jehoshaphat's son, Joash's grandfather, Jehoram, he was the one that married Athaliah and followed the wicked ways of the house of Ahab that he had married into. And so they went after Baal. That was what Athaliah served. And we already read that as soon as Joash was made king, that Baal worship was stamped out in Judah, and so it was there very much had been brought in as the religion of the rulers, and was spread among the people of Judah. by Jehoram and Athaliah. And then Ahaziah, Joash's father, was also trained in the ways of the house of Ahab. And so, and then of course, when he died, when he was killed by Jehu, the son of Nimshi, then Athaliah, Joash's grandmother, usurped the throne for 6 years. So in all of that time, from Jehoram and Ahaziah and Athaliah, they were against the Lord and his truth. So we could see why the temple had been forsaken. They'd forsaken the Lord and they'd forsaken the temple there. And so he was minded to repair the house of the Lord. And it says in verse 5 here in 2 Chronicles 24 that he gathered together the priests and the Levites and said to them, go out unto the cities of Judah and gather of Israel money to repair the house of your God from year to year, and see that you hasten the matter. Howbeit, the Levites hastened it not. In verse 5, we can see, because we could ask the question, I mean, Joash is obviously grown old enough now where he can lead this. He's not the 7-year-old boy that ascended to the throne. This is obviously some years into his reign now, when he's old enough to be speaking after this manner, to give instructions like this to the Levites. So we could ask, well, why Jehoiada was the high priest and a righteous man, why hadn't he already done this while Joash was growing up? Well, the answer to that is pretty obvious in the instructions that were there. The king was sending the Levites out to ask all the people to donate money, and not just one time. This was going to be a yearly, which is what we would call a tax, isn't it? There was going to be a tax on the people that was going to go towards the maintenance of the temple. Well, if the king is not behind that, how far is that going to go? I mean, are the people going to be, just because the Levites show up and say, we need money for the temple, when they've been already led by their rulers who were against that to begin with? So before Joash is sending them out to do this, I mean, how Jehoiada, if he'd sent the Levites out, I mean, how successful would that have been as far as having the people to give their money like this and to be doing it on a yearly basis? But when you have the king's authority behind it, which means if it's not done, then of course you've got law enforcement, you've got all of that to deal with. So this is a very different matter when you have the strength of the ruler, the king, behind this work. So he sends the Levites out to go do this, but they're dragging their feet. Now, what would be the reason for that? This is really sad. Now at least for some years, the Levites had gotten quite comfortable with whatever their situation was, and they weren't doing much, were they? And they really weren't showing any motivation or zeal to be doing what they needed to be doing for the Lord. And that's another reason why we're glad that at least the Lord has provided us an opportunity to be doing more of the things openly that we were hindered to for so long. Because it's the devil's going to try to get us to slip into bad habits and to not be as minded to serve and do things as we can do. And we can see an example of this with these Levites here. I mean, they're for quite a while now. I mean, all of the spiritual direction has been against serving the Lord, except for now after Athaliah under Jehoiada. But still, they haven't had to do much, and they seem to be quite comfortable with not doing much. But we better not be comfortable not doing much. We're serving the Lord. This is one reason why we looked at that so in such detail, and when we were in James chapter 1 on Wednesday night, not too long ago and studying about being a doulos, which is the Greek word that's translated servant most of the time in the New Testament, but it means a slave, and we belong to the Lord. We are His, and if we are living for Him because we belong to Him, well, then that's going to be very different as far as how we approach what we're going to be doing from moment to moment, as opposed to if we're just out here on our own doing where we can do whatever we want, like we're some kind of a free agent or something, which we're not. We belong to the Lord, and if we understand that, then that's going to be demonstrated in how we live. That's the basis for all of the commandments that we have, and why that we're going to, if we understand that, we're going to be very diligent in our service to Him at all times, seeking Him to serve Him with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength. And it wouldn't matter whether it should not matter whether anybody else is around to be looking over us. I mean, we shouldn't have to have somebody to tell us, okay, you need to be going to do this, or you need to be doing that. That's good. If we're serving the Lord, and that's who we're doing it for, well, we're going to be doing that because that's what we should do, to serve Him. Whether anybody else is around to encourage us to do that or not. But are these Levites, do they have this mind that they're the Lord's, and that they need to be diligently seeking and serving Him with all of their heart? They're not showing that here, are they? So they're going to have to be dragged into this. I mean, this is the Lord's work. And why should they have to be pushed so hard to do something that's good? Well, that's what happens if we're not thinking right. So we need to remember this example here, not be like them. We could look at other examples of God's work, and even some more in the Old Testament. Right now, we're not going to go to the book of Nehemiah, but I would offer to you to or suggest you go and refresh on in the book of Nehemiah, especially chapter 3 there, where it gives a description of the rebuilding of the wall and the different ones. Ones had assignments at different sections to build a wall around the whole city of Jerusalem. That wall had been in disrepair, had been broken down going back to when the Babylonians had conquered Jerusalem and destroyed it. Well, Nehemiah went back for that reason to do that work to repair the walls, and he had the commandment of the Persian ruler behind him, that authority. But that we saw that many of the people were diligent in that, but some others weren't. Some others were not working like they should, and some of the nobles, they were not thinking that was suitable work for them to have to do. Some of them thought they were too good for that kind of job. But we don't want to have that kind of mind at all. Whatever the Lord gives us to do, if whatever that opportunity we have is, we need to do it for Him if He's given us the opportunity, and be very diligent and faithful in it. But verse 6 says, "And the king called for Jehoiada, the chief, and said unto him, Why hast thou not required of the Levites to bring in out of Judah and out of Jerusalem the collection, according to the commandment of Moses, the servant of the Lord, and of the congregation of Israel, for the tabernacle of witness? For the sons of Arhaliah, that wicked, or Athaliah, that wicked woman, had broken up the house of God, and also all the dedicated things of the house of the Lord did they bestow upon Balaam." So there, that goes along with what we were talking about, and why the temple was in need of this repair here. Here, Athaliah, that wicked woman, well, she was stripping the temple of valuables for to use for the house of Baal. There were all of these things have been going on for some time that were very wicked and had caused this particular need here. And so in verse 8 it says, "And at the king's commandment, they made a chest and set it without at the gate of the house of the Lord. And they made a proclamation through Judah and Jerusalem to bring into the Lord the collection that Moses, the servant of God, had laid upon Israel in the wilderness. So they had forsaken that. They weren't doing that. So now they need to be getting back to what they should have been doing in the first place. Verse 10 says, "And all the princes and all the people rejoiced and brought in and cast into the chest until they had made an end." So is there a change in the heart of the people going on here? There's definitely that. Who's behind that? And that's the work of the Lord. And so here God is clearly working and blessing this change of direction that has taken place in Judah now after the death of Athaliah under Jehoiada the priest particularly. But at this point, Joash is very enthusiastically going along with it. But that's not going to last, as we've noted. So then at verse 11, it says, "Now it came to pass that at what time the chest was brought unto the king's office by the hand of the Levites, and when they saw that there was much money, the king's scribe and the high priest's officer came and emptied the chest and took it and carried it to his palace, to his place again. Thus they did day by day and gathered money in abundance. And the king and Jehoiada gave it to such as did the work of the service of the house of the Lord, and hired masons and carpenters to repair the house of the Lord, and also such as wrought iron and brass to mend the house of the Lord. So the workmen wrought, and the work was perfected by them, and they set the house of God in his state and strengthened it." So there again we see some very encouraging words there about what was going on in the land by the people here because of this. So they had the people had were very motivated in giving, and so they were willingly giving. They had an abundance of the money, and then you have these workmen that are doing the work, and the Lord is blessing all of this. And so verse 14 says, "And when they had finished it, they brought the rest of the money before the king and Jehoiada, whereof were made vessels for the house of the Lord, even vessels to minister and to offer withal, and spoons and vessels of gold and silver. And they offered burnt offerings in the house of the Lord continually all the days of Jehoiada." So there again, it tells us how long this is going to last, throughout his days. Which again tells us, I mean, who's really behind this? I mean, this is clearly this is Jehoiada, his work and what he was attempting to organize. So he had the backing of the king that he had raised now to make this happen. But clearly, this was Jehoiada at work and doing righteously, and the Lord blessing that. Now, one of the things that we read in this account in 2 Kings chapter 12 was that the ones that did the work and handled the money, that they were faithful. Back in 2 Kings 12 verse 15, it says, "Moreover, they reckon not with the men into whose hand they delivered the money to be bestowed on workmen, for they dealt faithfully." So the Lord is blessing this every way, from the giving of the money to its collection to its disbursement. Everything is being done willingly, diligently, faithfully, and everyone is encouraged in this work of the Lord. So the Lord is blessing the kingdom of Judah at this time and under the direction of Jehoiada. So even though Jehoiada is not obviously the king, he's the high priest. I mean, he's really the one that's ruling Judah all of these years and right up to the end of his life. And things are being done well and righteously in the land throughout his lifetime. So this was a blessing in Israel, I mean, particularly in Judah, that part of Israel, and the kingdom of Judah for those years Jehoiada was high priest. So even though, as far as the kings are concerned, he's not one of them, he is going to, he is considered, even among the people, they recognized that he was the ruler, or had been, and he was the one responsible for this change in direction for the land and bringing the people back to the Lord and leading the kingdom in righteousness. That this was Jehoiada's work, because he's going to be buried among the kings. Let's look at verses 15 and 16 back in 2 Chronicles 24. It says, "But Jehoiada waxed old and was full of days when he died. 130 years old was he when he died. And they buried him in the city of David among the kings, because he had done good in Israel, both toward God and toward his house." I mean, so who does the Lord credit this work for doing this work? I mean, it was Jehoiada. And we've read about other ones that were not given honor in their burial. Particularly, we read that about Jehoram, Jehoshaphat's son, the one that had married that wicked Athaliah and then followed her ways. But he was not given honor in his death. I mean, who was the one that blessed Jehoiada, gave him this honor, but didn't to one who was actually was a king? That is Jehoram. I mean, this is all from the Lord, and we can see that here, that God gave him that honor in his burial, that he was buried among the kings. So even though he was the high priest, I mean, he was the one that led the land for his days. He brought up Joash. He was the one that restored the rulership to Joash, who was a rightful heir to the throne, to have it back with the descendants of David, according to the will of God, and then everything with the direction of the land and what was going on all of his days. And he lived to be many years old. We're not told how old he was when Joash was born. I mean, he was obviously quite up there in years even at that point. But he lived to be 130 years, this would encompass at least much of the reign of Joash. That reign was for 40 years in Jerusalem, verse 1 told us. Much of Joash's reign was really Jehoiada's reign, but it's at the end, those last years of Joash, when there's no Jehoiada around, that's when the direction changes again, which is so sad to read. I know we've already made a point about it as it's come up a couple of times already, but we do need to keep this in mind, and whether it's in our role as bringing up children in the Lord's nurture and admonition, or as grandparents and influence we might have in that way, or with our young people as part of the congregation. There's many ways that the Lord gives us opportunities to be one to strengthen and encourage our young people, whether it's bringing them up directly as their parents or beyond that. And then, of course, on the other side, and we have a few younger ones in here right now. How are you going to live your life, and what are you going to do when all of these gray heads in here are gone? We're not going to be around forever. What are you going to do? I mean, are you going to be here with your own gray head one day, the Lord willing, and be the ones carrying on and continuing diligently serving the Lord? Are you only going to do this, do good while you're under your parents, and then when you're off on your own, are you going to go off and leave? We all know this is true, but there are many young folks that have been in here that aren't here now. And it's not because they've they can't be, or they couldn't be, or shouldn't be. But we've lost a lot that were here and brought up and taught by their parents the Lord's ways, and then they got up to age and they forsook the Lord. That we got to pray for them. Some might return, and that's what we need to pray for. But that's a question we all have to ask ourselves. Are we going to be steadfast and unmovable and always abound in the work of the Lord? Or are we going to forsake him? Are we going to forsake him when we get a little older? Are we going to forsake him? And some people forsake him after they've been very old. That's a really sad thing when you see some that have given their lives and serving the Lord, and then later on in their days, for whatever reason, they go after, go off and follow doctrinal error or other things that pull them away from the Lord in their later years. I mean, so at what point can we say, well, we've already got this, we've got this handled, we're fine, and we don't need to be concerned about anything? I mean, wasn't Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, 24 through 27, wasn't he very concerned that while he was preaching to others that he himself might end up being a castaway? Well, he was, and so he was being very diligent and disciplining himself and running his race so that that didn't happen. That was something he was very mindful of. He knew that the devil could pull him away, and he was not at all thinking that, well, this will lead into our study for the next hour. The Apostle Paul did not believe in the so-called doctrine of eternal security or the perseverance of the saved. Once saved, always saved. Paul didn't believe that. He didn't believe that at all. And he didn't preach it or teach it, and neither did the Lord, and neither did anybody else who was a faithful Christian. What we read about in the New Testament and in that time, that's not taught. That wasn't believed because it isn't so. But we don't want to think that either. I mean, look at Joash as an example, and it's a sad one. But once the, and he's obviously a grown man, and this can happen then too. I mean, you might have strong leaders in your family, and you might already even start having some gray hair. But then when they're gone, then all of a sudden, without that influence there to turn away from the Lord. But are we serving the Lord because our parents do or did, or because somebody else did? That is that the reason? We should be thankful if we've been taught the truth by our parents. But in the end, the decision of whether we're going to serve the Lord or not, whose decision is that? We all have to decide that ourselves. And we're going to stand or fall based on that choice that we make there. And Joash made the wrong choice. When he no longer had that strong influence of Jehoiada there, he forsook the Lord. Now the Lord gives that honor to Jehoiada, and all the people recognize that he had been the leader of the kingdom, the nation, for all those years of his life, and that he had guided them well and righteously. But verse 17 says, "Now after the death of Jehoiada came the princes of Judah and made obeisance to the king. Then the king hearkened unto them." So was Joash, was he a leader, was he a follower? He's a follower. Now when he had a good man who was the principal influence in his life, there, he followed him in doing what was right. But then he's gone, and now you have these princes here that come to him and do obeisance to him. "You're the man now, Joash. You're our king." And then he follows them. Why doesn't he lead them? Why doesn't he lead them in the ways that he was taught by Jehoiada? Because that's the right way, because those are the Lord's ways. Why isn't he doing that? Why does so suddenly does he change from having done all of these things right in the sight of the Lord to now listening to these princes who obviously are not righteous men? Verse 18 says, "And they left the house of the Lord God of their fathers and served groves and idols. And wrath came upon Judah and Jerusalem for this their trespass." So here are these other ones, and it would certainly appear from the description they're probably a lot younger than Jehoiada had been. These are probably more along the lines of peers of Joash, but he listens to them. They're not righteous men. They don't love the Lord, and they're not servants of the Lord. And so how quickly does he go from here he is being all concerned about making sure that the Levites quit dragging their feet and they get out there and do the work they're supposed to do as the Lord's helpers for the spiritual guidance of Israel, and looking after the temple and all of that, getting him out there to collect the funds to repair it and everything, and he's having to rebuke them for their lack of diligence in that. And then as soon as Jehoiada's dead, what does he care about the temple anymore? It's gone. And, of course, what would be the reason to care for the temple in that time? Because it's a building, or because it was the Lord's, it was the Lord's house. It was where the Lord's work was to be done. That would have been the reason to care about it. But what does it say about Joash and his care for the Lord? I mean, that's the real point. How do you go from caring about and being so mindful of doing what's right in the sight of the Lord to so quickly turning away from him and turn to idols? It was a change in the leadership. You ever seen that with even a congregation that is known for its strength and faithfulness? They have godly elders and faithful preachers, and then something happens, that generation passes, there's a change in what goes on in the eldership, and then that will also then lead to inevitably to a change in what happens with the preaching there. But we can see a congregation that was so long so strong, at least as the appearance was, and then when the leadership changes, just about on a dime, goes off in a completely different direction. You ever seen that? I think we've all seen that, and more than once. It's very sad. But what's going on there? Why do so many of the people, the members there in the congregation, why are they going along with when the leadership is good and they're following that willingly, but then it changes and they just as willingly go after falsehood when it comes in? What's going on there? Well, we have a lot of people that are like Joash in that regard, don't we? They're there and they're just following whatever, they're followers, and they're going to follow whatever's there. Is that how we're supposed to be? That's not how we're supposed to be. And we're supposed to serve the Lord. And if we have people around us that are of the same mind, that's excellent. We can encourage each other in doing that. But if something changed on that, if I got up here today and I start teaching air, you better not follow that and listen to that. You better get rid of me in a second. I mean, that's just the truth of it. I mean, that if there's any change that ever took place like that, I mean, we can't let somebody lead us astray. Because if we're following men, then you get a change there and somebody's leading you wrongly and you follow that, where are we all going to end up? In the ditch? Of course, that ditch is known as hell. But we got to be very careful about that and remember these lessons and never forget it. We've got to be strong in the Lord and never change on that. But we see the sad thing that happened to Joash. These wicked princes give him obeisance, and is there some problem that he's got with the praise and glory of men? It sure appears that way, doesn't it? But they give him that, and he follows them. So he forsakes the Lord, and the Lord's angry with Judah and Jerusalem because of their trespass. Verse 19 says, yet he sent prophets to them to bring them again unto the Lord, and they testified against them, but they would not give ear. So he's sent, it says, prophets, plural. So the Lord has used more than one. It would appear several, at least, that he's sent to correct them and to call them to repentance. The prophets came and telling them, you're doing wrongly, and you need to repent, return to the Lord. They don't listen to that. Now, in verse 20, this in some ways, it parallels what the Lord himself spoke about in a parable near the end of his life, when he was there in Jerusalem in his last week on the earth. And he gave that parable about the Lord of the vineyard that had his sent his servants to collect the fruits of the ones that he had let the vineyard out to. And when the Lord's servants came, what did they do with them? They abused them, they killed them, and then finally he sent his son and said, they will reverence my son. And they said, oh, here's the heir. And they killed him. So the Lord asked those people, including those the leaders of the Jews, who were the very ones he was speaking about. They were the ones fulfilling that. Of course, in the parable, God had sent his prophets to his people. And had they listened to them? How many of the prophets had they rejected and killed like this? God sent his son. But then what happened to his son when he sent them to his own? That's what the parable was about. But he asked them, what will he do with those ones when he comes? He will destroy those wicked men. Jesus then quoted from Isaiah and how they were fulfilling that. And that one that they rejected, that stone that the builders rejected, was going to be made the head of the corner. And it would grind to powder those ones that rejected him. That's going to be the Lord's judgment in the end. But the Lord sent all those prophets, then he sent his son. Well, in a similar vein, I mean, the Lord is sending prophets to Joash. He's not listening, or any of these princes that he's following, all this wickedness, not listening. Then, verse 20, he saves the one. If there's anyone that's going to be able to reach Joash now, it's this one in verse 20. If there's anybody that he's going to give ear to, it should be this one. Verse 20 says, and the Spirit of God came upon Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada the priest, which stood above the people and said unto them, thus saith God, why transgress ye the commandments of the Lord that you cannot prosper? Because you have forsaken the Lord, he hath also forsaken you. And now he stood above the people and said to them. So what does that say about Joash's error, as he forsook the Lord and then went after idols? What happened with the people? Those same people that we were reading about such a short time ago that were so enthusiastically were giving, willingly giving for the repair of the temple, and the money is overflowing. Now what? Now how? Here they had been. What had they done under Jehoshaphat? I mean, just think. Look at the what's going on among all the people there under Jehoshaphat, under Asa and Jehoshaphat. They're following the Lord. Well, Jehoshaphat's son Jehoram, who's married Athaliah, goes after Baal, brings that in, and what do the people do? Well, a lot of them go after Baal. Now, we did read about one of the cities of Judah that refused. So there was at least that one, and we don't know what ended up happening to them as a result of their defiance, but they weren't going to follow that wickedness. But they stood out as an exception because they were not going to go after and follow their king who had forsaken the Lord. But what about the rest of the cities of Judah and all the rest of the nation? I mean, they followed Jehoram and then followed Ahaziah, and they're worshiping Baal. Then Jehoiada, after Athaliah is killed and Joash becomes king under Jehoiada's leadership, then they're following the Lord again. Well, then he dies and Joash, the king, forsakes the Lord. And what do the people do? Well, now they're going after all these idols again because Zechariah has stood above the people and said to them, "Why transgress ye the commandments of the Lord that you cannot prosper?" So the rebuke was for starting with Joash and those princes, but it now is for all the people, all the ones that were following them. So Joash was a follower, but how many of the people of the nation were too? And they would just change direction just based on whatever the leader was, whatever the leader's doing, that's what they're doing. Sad. I mean, how many of these people are going to be steadfast and be serving God? And if it's not God's ways, they're not going to follow it. But if it is, they will. Those are rare to see that. Those are the exceptions. But notice this is Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada the priest. So we don't know what his age was. But as far as with Joash being brought up by Jehoiada, who was his paternal uncle by marriage, the husband of Jehosheba, his paternal aunt. I mean, he's brought up by his aunt and uncle, but the fact that does not have his parents there, and it's from his infancy. I mean, for all intents and purposes, the aunt and uncle are really his parents. I mean, so from that standpoint, Zechariah, who is the actual son of Jehoiada, is really like what to Joash? It's like his brother. I mean, this would be like his own brother. I mean, it's his cousin. It's his first cousin, but it's like a brother. I mean, he's much closer than would be. I mean, cousins can be very close, but I mean, this is one brought up by the same parents. So this is essentially his brother. I mean, so the Lord's given these other prophets. Now he's bringing, inspiring as his prophet, this one that's essentially the king's own brother. If he's going to listen to any prophet, would he give ear? I mean, for what Jehoiada had done, Jehoiada had saved his life, hadn't he? I mean, Athaliah was after his life. I mean, he's only alive because of Jehoiada saving him. Of course, we know it's the Lord that did it, but Jehoiada was the one he used to do it. Did Jehoiada take any risk by hiding that infant that Athaliah had sentenced, her own grandson who'd sentenced to be killed? I mean, Jehoiada was risking his own life and saved Joash's life, brought him up, made him king, guided him, did everything. I mean, how much good had Jehoiada done for Joash in his life? He wouldn't even be alive if it weren't for that man. And as soon as he dies, I mean, what does he do? Then he forsakes the Lord, and now here's the man's son, the son of the man that had saved his life and really that he owed everything to, as far as from the standpoint of somebody the Lord used to do good to him. Does that give us any obligation? I mean, do we just say, well, it was the Lord that did that, not you? And some speak like that. Is that correct? Are we supposed to? We know that all the blessings do come from God. Does that mean that whoever the people are that the Lord uses to do us good are irrelevant and don't matter to us? Is that correct? You remember 1 Timothy chapter 5 when he speaks about the church enrolling those that is to support widows that are widows indeed. That does not include ones that have family members, their children and grandchildren that are there to look after them. And what did the Lord say about the children and grandchildren of the widows? That they should requite their parents, that they should return to them the good they had done to them to bring them up. Well, were we ever helpless? Were we ever at a state in our existence where we could do absolutely nothing for ourselves and we were fed, we were clothed, we were given everything by ones who loved us and cared for us, that the Lord used to do it? God is the one that got us here and got us to where we are to right now. But how many people has he used to get us here? And I mean, there's all the physical things, but what about ones that the Lord has used to teach us his ways? I mean, is there does that mean anything to us, or should it? Well, of course, the Lord said the ones who do not, in 1 Timothy 5:8, he said the ones that don't provide for their own, he says, are worse than an infidel. He says they should requite their parents. They should return that. That's why he says to honor them. And that wicked tradition that Jews developed, and at least that was still around in Christ's time, was that Corban, the gift. You could just give some lump financial sum and then just say, now I'm released from all obligations for to you, my parents, anymore. Here's your money. That'll take care of you for the rest of your time. I'm free from you. And then they don't have to do anything more for their parents. Does that go along with honoring your father and mother? That's what Jesus said. That tradition transgressed that commandment of God. We owe our parents something. We owe something to those that have done us good. And the Lord has used many to do good to us. And we do have a responsibility and obligation to return good for ones who've done good to us. What does this mean to Joash? I mean, is he showing any, is he requiting Jehoiada any of that good? Well, here in Zechariah, his son comes as the Lord's prophet. And so verse 21 says, and they conspired against him and stoned him with stones at the commandment of the king in the court of the house of the Lord. And who was the one that ordered his murder? Joash himself, ordering the murder of his cousin, who was, for all intents and purposes, his own brother and the son of Jehoiada, the one that had done all that he had done for him, and he has him murdered. Because of what? He told him the truth. I mean, had Zechariah lied? Had he done something evil? He told him the truth. They were doing evil. He spoke the word of God to him. Look at where he is now. He has no love for the Lord. When the Lord is sending one speaking his own words, he's rejecting them and then kills this one who's essentially his own brother who told him the truth. And so it says in verse 22, thus Joash the king remembered not the kindness which Jehoiada his father had done to him. And notice it calls him his father there. I mean, he really was. Technically, he was his uncle, but he was like his father. He's the one that brought him up from his infancy, done everything for him. But he didn't remember that. He forgot all of it, but slew his son. And when he died, he said, the Lord look upon it and require it. And God did. And the end of Joash is going to, it's going to be a violent one himself. He slew with the sword, and he's going to be slain with the sword. And he's not going to be buried with the kings. So he's going to be killed by a conspiracy. Well, as it just says there in verse 21, they conspired against Zechariah. So Joash led a conspiracy against the Lord's prophet, the son of the man who was essentially his father, and the prophet being essentially his brother. And he leads a conspiracy against him and murders him. And, well, a conspiracy is going to come against him, and he's going to be murdered. But as Jehoiada was buried with the kings, Joash, who is the actual king, is not going to be buried with the kings. The Lord sorted this out. So he reaped what he sowed. But we'll read the end of that, Lord willing, next week and finish up 2 Chronicles chapter 24 at that time, Lord willing. We're out of time now, so we'll go now to our Heavenly Father in prayer as we close.